This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Martin Luther King's economic justice agenda from Memphis to Wisconsin.
Later on, from ground zero of the war on the workers, reports from Wisconsin and Ohio.
But now, 43 years ago, a struggle by 1,300 sanitation workers for economic justice brought Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. to Memphis. On the eve of his death, hours after marching with the AFSCME sanitation workers who were being denied the right of collective bargaining and were facing down the armed forces of the city and the state, Martin Luther King Jr. declared that work that serves humanity, it has dignity and it has worth.
Today in Ohio, Wisconsin, Michigan, Florida, and more than a dozen other states, well-funded corporatist politicians are trying to take away the union rights Dr. King gave his life for. This year, to commemorate his sacrifice, the AFL-CIO has called for nationwide events and actions to link the struggle of 1968 to the challenges we face today. We are one.
We're joined now by Dr. Vincent Harding, author of numerous books, including Martin Luther King, The Inconvenient Hero. Dr. Harding, confidant and speechwriter for Dr. King, discusses on this 43rd year since the death of Dr. King,
his economic justice activism and its relevance for today as workers who battle for survival of their labor organizations against giveback, stagnating wages, and unemployment. Now carrying on the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King with Dr. Vincent Harding.
Friend, how are you?
I would just like to go back to that time in Memphis and what you thought about Dr. King throwing his lot in with the striking sanitation workers marching under the banner, "I am a man."
I was very proud of him, that he made it very clear to all of his staff people when he was invited to come to Memphis, and all of the staff were saying to him, "Martin, we don't have time to go to Memphis. We're working on the Poor People's Campaign." And Martin very appropriately said to them, "This is the Poor People's Campaign. These garbage workers are the Poor People's Campaign." And I am still very proud of him and still want to encourage all those who see themselves in any way being faithful to his legacy to see the connection between his standing with and dying for public sector workers, the connection between that action and the actions that are going on around our country today.
And before we talk about what's happening today, why don't you flesh out also what the Poor People's Campaign was that the Memphis campaign was a part of?
Martin and others were seeing the need to deal with the continually worsening situation of poor people in America. The idea of the Poor People's Campaign was to move beyond civil rights for black people, which was never his limitation, but often the limitation of many people. He saw, and SCLC saw, and others who were working in the movement saw the need to call attention to the fact that the poor people of this country of every color were in trouble and needed to find a way to organize themselves and organize with others to call the country away from its demonic activities in Vietnam and elsewhere in the world, to turn attention to the needs of the poor in this country. And one of the ways in which King and his co-workers were working on this was planning a major kind of presence coming to Washington, D.C. in the spring of 68 to, if necessary, impede the workings of the government, to say, in essence, this government should not go on, especially go on its way in the world, without taking account of those of us who are poor and weak and beaten in this country. The idea was to have hundreds of thousands of poor people and their allies come into Washington, D.C. to try to make that statement and try to face down a government that was not paying attention to their needs.
It always seemed to me that the Poor People's Campaign, in conjunction with, as part of it, the Memphis sanitation struggle, was a coming together of what we classically refer to as the issue of race and class, and that it might have gone forward almost with the motto that economic rights are the human rights issue of the 20th century at that time.
That is right. I would like to add another element that must not be kept out of the larger picture. Race and class and the deep dangers of imperialism in the world were all wrapped together, because Martin saw that even the elementary progress that was being made through the war on poverty in America, those steps forward were being pushed back and cut off by the war against the Vietnamese people. So race, class, and the larger issue of the role of this country in the world, as we talk about race and class, talk about workers together on these issues, that must always be done in the context of what is this country doing in the world.
And these same issues of race, class, and imperialism, as we commemorate April 4th this year, the death of Dr. King and the struggle of Memphis, how do you see that today, as the FL-CIO is calling for and has 1,000 events all throughout the country fighting back against state governments and federal governments which are ignoring them or oppressing them?
I see it still absolutely necessary, Ken, for all who organize around economic issues in this country to keep in mind and to keep everyone in mind of the fact that those issues cannot be addressed without at the same moment addressing, at this point in history, for instance, the wars in which our country is involving itself, and the wars that so easily can be even more fully numbered as we go on, as long as we face the world with the kind of attitude that deems it our right and our responsibility to tell the world what to do, especially what to do as it relates to our own interests. The issues are still very, very similar in terms of the American approach to the world outside of our country and how it affects the way in which we relate to the weak and the unorganized and the poor in our country. That connection, it seems to me, must always be a part of our organizing messages.
And you are the drafter, Dr. Harding, of what some people would suggest is the most brilliant speech that Dr. King delivered, although that's hard pickings because there was some very poignant oratory of
right.
Dr. King.
That's right.
But it is a striking, one of the critical, certainly, speeches of my lifetime. The remarkable anti-war manifesto known as the Riverside Speech. What is the relevance and the significance as we go back to the drafting and the message that was delivered most poignantly by Martin Luther King and yourself, really, in Riverside those years ago?
The fact still is that we, citizens of a nation that is trying to become a democratic society, have tremendous and almost breathtaking responsibility not to leave everything in the hands of even the best president. We have to figure out what does it mean for us to do the work that is necessary to create a more perfect union, one that is not a union for imperial action in the world. We've got to keep organizing around it, folks in labor, folks in the churches, folks in education, folks in local and national politics have to keep addressing this question, where do we stand in relationship to the world around us? I am a historian, and I tend to try to look at things in perspective. And what I see is that our nation has not spent enough time really engaged in debate among us about what is our role in the world. And until we turn our attention to that and ask why we're doing what we're doing and why we are where we are and what are the alternatives to the policies that are being developed in our name, that until we take those issues on, we're going to continue being in trouble. You may recall that at the heart of the Vietnam speech, Martin was saying that we will continue finding ourselves in this kind of terrible predicament until our own values are changed, until our own approach to the world has changed, until, as he put it, there is a kind of revolution in values in the American society.
Dr. Vincent Harding, thank you for all of your years of keeping on, and helping us keep our eyes on the prize.
I'm glad that we've been able to have this conversation about what are the next stages of us moving towards our best humanity as citizens of a nation.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, BAI, continue, please.
We will.
All right, okay. Good.
There was a man, voice of a people, standing on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel. Shots rang out. Yes, it was a gun. He was the only one to fall down, y'all. That ain't right. Then his people scream. Ain't no need for sunlight. Ain't no need for moonlight. Ain't no need for street light. 'Cause it's burning real bright. Some folks say we gon' fight, 'cause this here thing just ain't right. 1960 what? 1960 who? 1960 what? 1960 who? 19... Hey! The Motor City is burning, y'all.
Gregory Porter, 1960 what? The Ohio legislature just passed Governor Kasich's union-busting bill, which nullifies public employee rights. Meanwhile, Governor Scott Walker's rush to cut public sector worker benefits and bust their unions in Wisconsin has been momentarily stymied by court action.
The workers in both states aren't taking the assaults lying down. They're carrying on the legacy of Dr. King. We now go to the We Are One demonstration in Madison, Wisconsin, from ground zero of the war on the workers. We're joined by Peter Rickman, teaching assistant at the La Follette School of Law at the University of Wisconsin and member of the Teaching Assistants Association, AFT, Local 2220, and Joseph Rigola, executive director of the Ohio Association of Public School Employees, AFSCME.
Thanks for having us.
And Peter, why don't we start with you because you're at a live demonstration. Why don't you tell us what's happening in Madison, Wisconsin right now and what has happened at the demonstration throughout the day?
Well, right now we've got a Madison City sanitation worker. He was preceded by not only Reverend Jesse Jackson, but also two of the original sanitation workers from the 1968 Memphis strike at which Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. It's a pretty incredible connection to have the folks from the time when Martin Luther King Jr. was building a movement for social and economic justice connected here to what we are doing to build a movement for social and economic justice.
The Memphis sanitation workers were part of AFSCME. They wanted a contract. What is that connection? They marched under the banner, We Are a Man. Is that still where we are today in terms of union rights in Wisconsin?
The most popular site around here today is a recreation that AFSCME put together for folks that play on the I Am a Man theme. It's not just I Am a Man, it's I Am a Worker. But what's really important to keep in mind is that, yes, Dr. King was in Memphis in 1968 for a public employee strike. But it wasn't just about public employees, it was about dignity and worker justice. And that's what we're fighting for here today. This started as a public employee union rights struggle, but it's really grown into a movement for social and economic justice. Just like Memphis 1968 was about civil rights and racial justice, in addition to public employee collective bargaining rights and the labor movement, today we're fighting for healthcare justice, we're fighting for racial justice, we're fighting for worker justice, because they're all just different sides to the same coin of fighting to build a movement for social and economic justice for everyone.
And Joe Rigola from Ohio, you are an AFSCME local there who has been dealt a serious blow by Governor Kasich. If you could tell us what has been happening around your state in terms of protests and what's coming up.
Yes, obviously this is a solemn day for every American who's committed to social justice and democracy. The memory of Dr. King is strong for all of us, particularly so for every AFSCME member. There are 120,000 members of our union here in Ohio, and we did something that I know that Dr. King would be proud of. We filed referendum language with the Ohio Secretary of State and Attorney General with 6,000 signatures attached that we collected in 24 hours in order to place the question of Governor Kasich's attempt to break unions and destroy the middle class in front of the voters in November by way of a citizen veto. And obviously we have that path available to us here in Ohio. As I have traveled the state over the last 4 weeks or so, I've talked to about 4,000 AFSCME members face to face. There's no question that we are prepared to campaign as vigorously on behalf of the middle class in Ohio as Dr. King did so phenomenally and gloriously in Memphis and throughout all of his life. And we plan to send Governor Kasich a strong message that this will not be tolerated in America. We won't put up with stepping back again a half a century to a day when workers were treated as wage slaves.
To what extent do you see the activity of Governor Kasich as being the catalyst for really invigorating workers, the working class, to really launch a paramount struggle to make their interests and benefits pivotal in the years that come?
There is no doubt that this fight will resonate in Ohio for at least a decade to come. Working families have a clear picture now of the lines that have been drawn in this country between the super rich and privileged classes represented by Kasich and his Wall Street friends and the middle class represented by working people and by the trade union movement. And that message, and it's clear enough now for everyone, that I think it'll shape Ohio politics and a new sense of activism for a very, very long time to come.
And Peter Rickman in Madison, Wisconsin, both governors in both states have seen their popularity pummeled since they started this union busting and deficit reduction fever in both states. There's an election coming up tomorrow. There are recall petitions in Wisconsin. Talk about what you're doing past today.
Scott Walker has a popularity free fall that we haven't seen the likes of which since George Bush was in the White House. And it's not because he's done something that's unpopular or wrong, although he has done something that's unpopular and wrong. It's because working people have taken to the streets and are fighting back. We're raising the consciousness of working folks all around Wisconsin. It's not about what's happening in Madison or Milwaukee. It's about what's happening in cities and small towns all around the state, that working folks have been fed up for too long to take this sitting down anymore. We've been on our backs for four decades, and 40 years is long enough. We're fighting back, and that's what's making it clear to the politicians that when we fight back, people side with us. The union movement speaks for all working folks. I think that's something that's of utmost importance here, is that that's what we should be doing, and that's in fact what we are doing here. The labor movement is fighting for every person who works for a living in this state. We're standing up for the right to health care, the right to retirement security, the right to a decent job. And so we're taking to the streets and we're taking to the ballot box. Tomorrow, in our spring elections, that's just that's the opening salvo here. We're gonna elect some folks to offices like the state Supreme Court where we're gonna have legal challenges pending. We're electing folks to local offices who stand with public employees and all workers. And we're taking to the targeted districts, these Republican senators, collecting signatures for recalls. We're going to get that done throughout the course of this summer. We're going to hit the ballot box in November of 2012 to remake our state as well. But we're not just focusing on any one thing. It's not just about rallies. It's not just about electoral politics. We're organizing in our communities to bring folks the message that the labor movement is for every working person out there. And we're going to build and grow a new kind of labor movement for the 21st century by organizing working folks to stand up and fight back together. That's what's working here in Wisconsin, and that's what's working in places like Ohio, too.
I think we need to understand that the right wing has had a monopoly on the airwaves and on public opinion shaping in this country for some time. And I think they've done us a tremendous service, not by just by waking up union members, but by waking up the middle class to the reasons behind their frustrations, their problems, their disappointments. All of the middle class in this country is in danger, and we know that. The bottom line is that Governor Kasich represents a mentality that is determined to turn America into a two-class society, one of the super rich and everyone else fighting and struggling with each other over the crumbs that are left from the tables of those Wall Street folks and the investment class, the investor class. And I think that's the fight that's been defined here in America by these people. And in Ohio right now, two-thirds of Ohioans are opposed to efforts to abolish collective bargaining rights for public sector workers because they understand two things, that as public servants, we really care as much about the welfare of the people we serve, the public we serve, and of our democracy as we do about the living that we earn. The voters also understand that the people that we represent live fairly modest lives, just like they do, that they struggle at the edge, always on the verge of catastrophe, living paycheck to paycheck. And they understand that the pensions and health care benefits and wages that our people earn don't qualify us as a privileged class, as the right wing wants to frame us. So that's why I think we're getting tremendous support from the public overall, that in this country, the people who produce the wealth ought to have some fair chance, some honest chance of sharing in it. And I think that's what we will be defining as we collect a half a million to three-quarters of a million signatures, put this issue on the ballot for voters to decide on in November, and send John Kasich back to work where he belongs, which is with his cronies trying to squeeze the last ounce of blood out of the turnip of the American people. So that's what we're fighting for here in Ohio.
Great. And Peter Rickman?
I can't tell you what kind of great reports I'm hearing all around the state about how people are on our side. Folks that I never would have expected, from my friends and family and people that they know, how proud they are of the fact that working folks are standing up and fighting back, that they support us, they're with us. You know, I come from paper mill country in northeastern Wisconsin, and the union that represents paper mill workers, private sector workers, blue-collar folks, you know, the white working class that are allegedly not on the side of the Democrats and progressives, they have been down here fighting with us every day for now going on 6 weeks, and they're talking to folks in their neck of the woods. So it's not about who shows up here in Madison on a rally today, although there were definitely a lot of people. It's the fact that we now have an awakening of working class folks from all around Wisconsin, all around Ohio, all around Indiana, all around the entire country saying, you know what? We are building a movement for social and economic justice. The labor movement is at the heart of that. Trade unions are at the heart of that. So I'm thrilled that all these people here showed up today and are going to go back into their own communities, whether it's Madison or Parson Field throughout our fine state, to go and talk to their neighbors and their friends and family about how working people are going to have a voice again, because we're building a real movement.
And Peter Rickman, thank you for your work in Wisconsin. And Joseph Regula with Local 3220 from Ohio. We're going to take it back, carry it on, and keep our eyes on the pride, the collective organizing and rights of working people in this country. Thank you, brothers, for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. And we'll keep the movement going.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.